It is week 29 of the year 2020, and this is Father Roderick to the max. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Father Roderick to the max. I am Father Roderick, and you're one of my monthly supporters, for which I am super grateful. Without your help, I couldn't do all these cool things. I want to welcome some new members to the community. We've got Scott, who joined last week. Jamie, I think I already mentioned Jamie last week, but hey, there's no ill in mentioning good friends several times. We've got Swan, who also joined us, and Michael, a very generous Patreon subscription. Thank you so much for your support. And this podcast is one of the ways in which I want to keep you up to date with what I'm doing with your help and with your support. In this episode, I will give you a review of something I was able to purchase thanks to you, which is this awesome light set with Elgato key lights. And I'm seeing so much improvement in my YouTube streams thanks to this these two new lights. I want to talk a little bit more about it in the rest of the show. And, well, we've got some other stuff lined up as well. But first of all, as usual, I want to head into the kitchen. Or, actually, in this case, I'm going to head outside and fire up the barbecue. One of my dreams has always been to barbecue in the summertime, which is something I have barely ever done, at least ever since I left my parents' house. My father was a huge fan of barbecuing, and whenever the temperature would go above freezing temperature, he would be outside in the garden firing up the barbecue. Actually, I should not say barbecue. That is something I need to get out of the way right from the get-go. We call it barbecue here in the Netherlands, probably also in other parts of Europe. In the United States, maybe also in the UK, you would not call what we do barbecuing. You would say it's a grill, you're grilling. And barbecuing is a different process. Barbecuing is more of a slow process where you leave the meat in the barbecue for several hours, sometimes even half a day or something like that, and it gets very tender. Whereas what we do in the Netherlands, we don't have patience for that. We don't have the weather for that. We're glad if we get an hour without rain in the summertime. So we do grilling because it's faster and it's very tasty. I love the smell. Actually, I shouldn't talk about food when I haven't eaten yet, but I love the smell of the charcoal fire, the smokiness of the meat. The crispiness, it is so good. So my father would always be in the garden, and it was always the same ritual. He'd put in, we would have this super, super low budget grill. Just this round circle, not very deep. It was very wonky, so it would oftentimes be blown over by the wind. That is how cheap it was. My parents didn't have much money when I grew up. And so my father would put in the coals, and then the ritual of the fire would start. It was almost liturgy. My father would place these little white cubes in between the charcoals, light it up with his lighter or with matches. And then he would spend about a half an hour trying to light the coals. And he was really struggling with it most of the time. I don't know why. Maybe it's because the lighter cubes were not very good quality, or I don't know. Maybe the charcoal may have been humid, but there was I just remember him whenever it was summertime, with his face all red, veins on his forehead all swollen up, because he was like blowing. He was breathing onto the charcoals to heat them up and to speed up the heating process. And sometimes it just wouldn't work. And then he would get very, very angry because he was hungry and my mom had already prepared the meat and the condiments and whatnot. And then he couldn't light the fire. So sometimes we would eat like 2 hours after he started trying to get the grill on, just because it didn't work. And then the actual grilling was also a challenge because, well, with these cheap grills, it's either super hot or it's not warm enough. So we would either get this you know, almost black meat that was completely charred, or it would be still almost raw, and we were eating that while praying because we didn't know what the effects would be an hour after dinner. After I left my parents to go to seminary, I've been without barbecue or grilling for about 10 years. The first seminary where I went in Belgium, they didn't do any grilling. We didn't even have a garden or a place to put to, you know, we would eat inside and there would be this lady cooking for us. And it was not the best food in seminary. It's almost comparable to, I don't know, like what students would cook themselves. This lady was wonderful young woman. She had dedicated her life to the church. She lived as a consecrated virgin. So she was very good at praying, very supportive of our vocations. Unfortunately, she had never, ever been taught how to cook. And so I remember some evenings where she would cook rice, and the rice would still be crunchy. So it would be, she would put way too much rice and not enough water. And so the rice would be completely tough, you know. So anyway, spent most of my seminary time without doing any grilling. Same was true for the second seminary where I went in the Netherlands. We just didn't have the space for barbecuing or grilling. And plus, we didn't have time because Mass was about an hour after dinner. So we would eat at 5:30, which is extremely early for me. I grew up in a family where we would eat usually around 8 o'clock, sometimes 8:30. We would spend hours at the table just talking. This was one of the ways in which my parents tried to educate us, is that we would eat, and while we were eating and after dinner, we would sit there and just talk and have discussions about politics, about the church, about school, anything. I really cherish these moments, and I always thought that was normal, that all families did that. And so I was so shocked when I stayed with my uncle and my aunt and their children. And the first time we stayed over there for a couple of days, because I think it was in summertime, the children would eat separately from the parents. And they would get different food as well. So they would get the, you know, the fries and the quick food. Whereas then when the kids had eaten, usually in front of the television, then the parents, my uncle and my aunt, would cook for themselves. And they would make nice food. And I was like smelling the real food. Like, why can't we have that? Why don't you eat together with your children? I was like, what a missed opportunity. Very strange. And then with my friends from school, we would sometimes, I would be invited for a dinner. I'd call my mom. They would eat even earlier. They would eat at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, which for me is tea time, you know. You don't eat dinner at 5. What are you going to do the rest of the day? But what struck me is that the friends that I had, they would eat super quickly. So they would be done with dinner within half an hour. That was so unthinkable for me. Like, dinner usually took at least an hour. At least an hour. And then we would talk for at least another hour or 2 hours sometimes, depending on the topics of discussion. None of that with my friends. None of that with the rest of the family. So I've been very privileged. And with the barbecue and the grilling, it's kind of the same. We would sit, my mother would put a table outside, and we would have these different cutlery as well. And we would eat usually still healthy stuff. So my mom was always very fixated on feeding us well and making sure that we get enough vegetables. So we would have usually like cooked vegetables and then some grilled meat, some skewers or a hamburgers, not that much. I don't think I've ever eaten hamburgers as a child. I think the first hamburger that I ever ate was in Amsterdam at a Burger King. I didn't even know what hamburgers were. We didn't, you couldn't buy them anywhere. Even McDonald's was pretty rare in the Netherlands when I grew up. How things have changed. And then chicken and sausages. Yeah, I remember sausages. And then when I turned 18, my dad would, when we would do barbecue, he would serve us wine. White wine, usually very sweet white wine. For him, that was the quintessential accompaniment to barbecue in the summertime, and those times were special. So I always told myself when I was still in seminary, once I'm a priest, once I have my own rectory, I will have barbecue every week. None of that happened. In my first parish, I did not have a barbecue. I didn't have the equipment, nor did I have the company. And cooking for yourself is kind of boring. It's not too bad, but I only started to really enjoy cooking after I got back from Italy. And I missed the Italian food, and I started to cook it for myself. And it's in this parish where I currently am that I finally had sometimes people that came over to eat. And so finally, I got myself a grill after all these years. And I inaugurated it last week, twice, actually. we had a barbecue. I keep calling it barbecuing. I apologize to those of you that say it's a grill. But we did organize a small barbecue with Inge and Henk, who have been helping me tremendously with the apartment upstairs, getting the old carpet out and giving me advice on the new kitchen, etc. If you want to hear more about that, make sure to listen to the episode of The Walk, in which I talk a little bit more, actually give you an audio tour of my rectory in its current state, which is kind of an in-between state. But that was a lot of work getting all the carpet out. And so we ended that with a barbecue session. And Henk actually put together the whole thing, because I bought a German grill. What was it again? It was a special type. I know nothing about barbecues. I know one thing, and that is that the type of grill that my father used is no longer available anywhere in the world. It probably got some kind of, international convention to prohibit dangerous grills. What was the name of that grill? So you have, I bought myself a kettle-style grill. I saw this grill at first in Animal Crossing. I'm not kidding you. And then I saw one on sale here at the local supermarket. Inge gave me a tip. And so I bought it. It was $79. But it is one of those, kind of better quality grills. And so this one apparently will last me several years. So it's a bit steep for a price. I thought I can buy a cheap one, but it will probably get rusty within a few weeks, since usually the grill is outside, and then I'll end up being my father, and I didn't want that. So I got this quality kettle grill, not to be confused with Kamado grills, the eggs. I've seen those in the United States, and Sebastian, one of my friends, also has one. Those are super heavy. They sometimes can weigh between 150 and 500 pounds. That is not something you're going to just, install for a summer evening just because you want to do some grilling. That one requires serious cooking. If not for the weight of that thing, then definitely for the investment, because those grills are very expensive. And then, of course, you've got the grills that I see usually on Instagram and in my Facebook account from my American followers, the propane natural gas or natural gas barbecue grills, the big ones, sometimes they look like small kitchens that they put outside. And then you've got hybrid barbecue grills, probably probably gas and or charcoal or something like that. Actually, I'm pretty happy with my charcoal grill because I just like the flavor that charcoal adds to the meat. So the first time Hank put that thing together, which was quite an IKEA-like experience. I was glad that I didn't have to do it. We added some coals, and it just didn't get warm. And so it took us a long time for just a few sausages. Then, for the end of the first, what is it? Usually at the end of the season for the board, we get together and we go out for dinner. This time, the board itself proposed, well, you have this new beautiful, this new rectory with a beautiful garden. Why don't we do a barbecue? And just, you know, just pay some people to come and do that for you, some caterers. And so I looked around, and there's actually a barbecue caterer here in the street. But it's expensive, because you not only do you have to pay for the food, you also have to pay for the guy who prepares the food and for the time that he spends installing the barbecue. So I was like, for about like a third of the price, I can buy both a grill for myself, and I can buy the food, and I can buy the drinks, and it's probably going to be so much more fun because we do it together. We do it ourselves. So that's what we did. And this time it was up to me to prepare everything because Hank was not there. And so, yes, I totally forgot that if you want to have a conversation and you want to prepare food, you have to choose. You cannot sit with the board and chat, and the food is not going to prepare itself. I don't have any house elves on the board, which is a shame. I could really use some house elves here. So I tried to do it myself, and it was quite a challenge to light the coals. One mistake that I avoided this time was the first time that we inaugurated the grill, we put in some huge chunks of coal. I didn't realize that it could take several hours for them to be completely fully, you know, burning and everything. So that's maybe one of the reasons that at the time the grill didn't get warm. So this time I used smaller charcoal, but it was a bit windy, so I had trouble lighting up the lighting material. After a while, it started to heat up finally. It took about half an hour to get it evenly lit. And then I put the first few, you know, first batch of sausages. I bought German sausages. I was like, okay, you can't go wrong with those. I remembered the brand from the summer camp that I went with 2 years ago with the other priest who organized this for teenagers. And we also barbecued there. And I remember that we got those same sausages, and they were pretty good. You can't go wrong. They're pre-cooked. So even if your grill is not hot enough, you will not get food poisoning, because basically the only thing you need to do is heat them up a little bit. So I put the sausages on the grill. I was like, I was comparing it to the first time that we inaugurated the grill. That's going to take a while before they're even warm. So I sat down with the board, and all of a sudden, Michiel, one of the board members, said, "What's all that smoke?" And I looked around, and I... No! The entire batch of sausages had turned black. I was a worthy heir of my father, because this is exactly what grilling looked like when I was a child. Turns out, once that thing is heated up and all the coals are burning, it can get really, really hot. And another thing that I forgot, and Hank told me that it worked like that. There are actually holes in the bottom of the grill. And if you open them with a lever, there's more oxygen that streams through your grill. And so the heat, it will heat up very quickly. If you want to slow down the cooking process, you have to close those holes. And well, of course, they were wide open. And that is why those sausages were completely black. Now, and they were probably not even completely ready on the inside. So I put them on the side, on the edge of the grill. I should have done that right away. And then, of course, over time, I got better at it. And when the party was over, that's when I told myself, now you're ready to host a barbecue session. So three times a charm, right? I'm going to do it again next week. And or maybe this weekend. I'm so hungry now that I'm in for a grilling session. I still have some spare ribs, leftovers from the board meeting, so maybe I'm gonna try and prepare those for the weekend. All right, enough about food. I'm getting way too hungry. What else have I got lined up here? Actually, not much. Oh, I got to talk a little bit about health.
Just look at the x-rays. You see that dark spot there? Whiplash.
Whiplash? Oh no.
And this smudge here that looks like my fingerprint? No, that's trauma.
Lynn in the chat says, McDonald's is not a good place to have your first burger. Hey, I compensated for it afterwards. My go-to place now for fast food, still good burgers, is Five Guys. But I have to go to Utrecht. So that's not going to happen soon. Ben wants to know if I blessed the grill. I wish I was that holy of a priest, but I'm not. It didn't even cross my mind to bless the grill. I prayed before I ate. That's all. So, what else? Oh, now everybody in the chat room is mentioning other stuff that I can do on the grill. Keep those suggestions coming. Health. That is something. I'm not saying I'm struggling with it, but I should do more to work on my health. One of the things that we know about the corona crisis right now is the healthier you are, the more likely you will have mild symptoms, because your overall resistance plays a role in fighting the virus. And it's not by accident. A lot of people that died are at a very advanced age and usually suffer from other ailments as well that have weakened them, and then the virus has more grip on your overall condition. One of the things that I've noticed is that because of the past few months and there's been so much stress, and also because of the fact that at least in the first stage of the corona crisis, we couldn't really go outside. We were really encouraged to stay inside. I didn't do much running. All the events that I signed up for, all the marathons, had been canceled. So there was no impetus to go out for a run and to train. And now it's too late. I gained quite a bit of weight over these past few months because I didn't move enough. I was always stuck at home here, plus extra stress. And I have a tendency, and I know this for years, I have a tendency to eat away my stress. So when I'm very stressed, when I'm worried about stuff, I sit down in front of TV, I watch movies and TV shows, and I just eat snacks. And I really have let myself go over the past few months. And I'm trying to get back to this healthy regime, and I just can't get a handle on it. And I'm probably not the only one who does this. But during the day, I try to really count my calories and be very conservative in what I eat, and to, you know, just eat good food, healthy food. And then it's 10 o'clock in the evening. And that's the most dangerous moment of the day. That's when I get tempted. And sometimes I tell myself, I'd better not watch TV right now. I got to go to bed. If I go to bed, I can't snack. And then I give it like a few minutes. Sometimes I'm even like, I should be able to watch TV shows without snacking. And I launch an episode of The X-Files, and I'm thinking, oh, what the heck? I'm just going to make some toast. Oh, I know it's not good. And normally I can compensate for it when I'm doing a lot of sports, when I'm running or biking a lot, but I'm still stuck at home for most of the week. So, yeah, there is more Father Roderick in this world than I care for. So, anyway, I'm just doing this public confession to tell myself that next time I want to, if I don't want to humiliate myself like this on a podcast, I should first try to eat less and definitely quit the snacking. But it's hard. And there is not much to replace snack. The one progress that I've made is that when I snack, I try to still focus on quality. So I've completely ditched the potato chips. I was hooked on potato chips for years. I don't even buy them anymore, and I don't care for them anymore. And it's because it turns out that they really have a very negative impact on my digestion. It's probably because of the salt and maybe also the chemical additives that they add. But I cannot, you know, I have almost a physical reaction when I eat potato chips. Unfortunately for me, there are many alternatives. So these corn-based snacks, my body has no trouble eating those. So I also try to prevent myself from buying those. But I always have some cheese in the house. And when there is cheese, there is temptation, because I'm a huge fan of cheese in any shape or form. But my favorite cheese is French cheese. So if you have a bit of Camembert or Brie, I'm not that much of a fan of Brie, but sometimes you have these cheeses based on old monastic traditions, and when they're on sale, they're very hard to resist. I'm going to quit this confession. I feel so bad about myself. Please pray for me. This is not a good place to be at. And I know that once I start training for my next marathon, this is not going to be a problem at all, because you burn so many calories that it's just not an issue. But right now, I'm doing too much media work, and I need to get out and I need to move more. Okay, enough of this. Let's move to the next segment.
I'm quite keen on comic books, especially the ones about superheroes. I find the whole mythology surrounding superheroes fascinating.
You ever try these comics?
No.
You know something?
No, what?
You read too many comic books.
I got some more tips on in the chat room for barbecuing. Asa Armin says, you may want to watch a fellow Dutchman barbecue enthusiast on YouTube. You may even know of him. His YouTube channel is called Pitmaster X. Never heard of the guy, but I'll definitely check it out. Middle F48 says, grill vegetables, chunks of zucchini, yellow squash, onion, and cherry tomatoes. Oh, wow, that's a good idea. That's actually something that I really love. Grilled vegetables. I have actually a big zucchini in my fridge. Never crossed my mind to put them on the grill. Thanks for the tip. I try to force myself to read some comic books every week, because it's something I really have to force myself to, just like regular reading. On the Father Roderick show, I told you how much I was falling behind on my my goal of reading a book a week, so I'm going to switch to shorter books just to kind of get back to. I need to have read 29 books by now. I've only read 16, so I need to catch up on that. And then with comic books, kind of the same thing. The issue with comic books is the only way for me to read them is on my iPad. I have an old iPad. It is the original iPad Air, I think. Is it the original one or is it the iPad Air 2? It's still working really well. The model, it's not written on the back if it's an iPad Air or an iPad Air 2. But anyway, it's must be 8 years old or something like that. It's still lightweight. The thing is, my eyes are getting worse. So I have more trouble reading without reading glasses. And so the comics on Marvel Unlimited oftentimes are I have to squint almost to read them, and it's not a very nice experience. I have been contemplating getting myself a bigger iPad just because it's easier to read. Just like I've been switching to bigger and bigger monitors as well. You should see my editing monitor. It's this humongous 34-inch super widescreen LG monitor. But what it allows me to do is to edit without wearing glasses, because computer glasses, I have glasses that are for exactly the distance between me and the screen, but they still give me a headache. And the same is true for reading glasses. I can't read for a long time, for extended times, with reading glasses. It's probably because I have to go to the optometrist and get a new set of glasses. But then I'm too greedy to do that. I'm too thrifty. I think I still have glasses. They work fine, but probably not. I'm just worried that if I go and get my eyes checked, that I'm going to have to buy new glasses. And glasses are expensive. Anyway, so I'm not reading as many comic books as I would like to. But I did put some effort in it, and I checked out this comic book called Star. It showed up in the recommendations. And Star is based on, it's actually a spin-off character from Miss Marvel. And so the description reads, usually I just read a comic based on if I get triggered by the description. That Star, the superhero Star, female superhero, is born of the Reality Stone. So this is part of the whole Infinity Stones mythology from the Avengers. This breakout character from Captain Marvel flies solo. Oh, so it's from Captain Marvel, not Miss Marvel. Captain Marvel. Ambitious reporter Ripley Ryan rocked New York City when she became the hero Star, adored by everyone. But in truth, she was Dr. Minerva's attempt, that's probably a bad guy, Dr. Minerva's attempt at a Kree human super soldier. Desperate for the strength to control her own destiny, she tried to kill Captain Marvel, oh no, and failed. Ripley was left defeated and powerless in the raft. I don't know what the raft is, or so she thought. The Reality Stone has found her, and now no prison can hold her. You thought you knew what the Infinity Stones were capable of. Think again. So this, in a way, reminded me of the Warrior Nun series that I reviewed on this week's show. In that was also a girl that was deceased and then was resurrected through this angel's halo that gave her a new life and superpowers. Seems to me that this is the same. So this first episode starts with probably a dream or nightmare of her being in the raft. I suppose it's some kind of, I don't know, purgatory or limbo or something. If you want to hear my discussion about limbo and purgatory, please check out my regular show. but she's actually dies because Captain Marvel punches a hole through her chest, literally. Her entire arm goes through her body. It's pretty gruesome. And so she has a nightmare about it. She wakes up and then she realizes that she is alive thanks to one of these Infinity Stones. And then she goes to a bar that's only frequented by superheroes. I didn't know that New York had bars like that. And then she's threatened by some huge other female superhero, very bulky, purple. It doesn't really say who she is, and that's when she tries to get a grip on her new superpower. And apparently, her superpower, because it's a reality stone, is that she can bend reality. She can change reality by thinking it different. But it turns out that is actually quite difficult to do. So she uses it as mind control, and that doesn't work on most of the enemies that she faces. And so she has to, I think she has to, the trick is to imagine the situation that you want, and then reality bends to that. It's kind of what you do in goal setting, right? Where you have to imagine yourself to be this slim, athletic, very strong priest, And then once you visualize it, you know what your goal is. And it's the visualization of the goal that makes you ditch the potato chips. At least I think that's how it works. So anyway, just as I'm struggling to visualize a very athletic Father Roderick, for Star, it is also quite something. Then she gets captured by Loki, who wants to take that stone out of her and, for some reason, fails to do it. And that's when she incinerates Loki. So he dies and ends up in a puddle of ashes on the floor, only to reveal later on, when Star is gone, that that was actually a projection of Loki by the real Loki. So it's just one of his tricks. This guy just can't die. According to Samuel, the raft is a superhero prison. Okay, it's in Captain America 3 Civil War. I do not remember that, but then I've only seen that movie once. I'll go check it. And then she also meets, and that's the advantage of the Marvel comic book universe. There are no boundaries between all these superheroes. They're all Marvel, so they can all be used. And that's different, of course, in the movie universe, where they are not allowed to do crossovers with certain superheroes because Marvel does not yet have all the rights. So in this case, Star meets, what's her name? Jessica. The one that Netflix did a series, Jessica Jones. So Netflix did a series about Jessica Jones because they had the rights, and now they can't continue it because the rights are reverting back to Marvel. So here in the comic book, there is a confrontation between these two women, and they fight each other. Why not? And then at the end of the episode, Scarlet Witch shows up in her comic book incarnation, which is a lot more superheroish than in the movies, where Scarlet Witch is a little bit of an underwhelming character. It's one of the few members of the Avengers that I didn't care for that much. But anyway, to be continued. That's the kind of the cool thing of reading these recent... This comic came out in 2020, and with Marvel Unlimited, you always have to wait a couple of months for them to appear on the app. And now I have to just wait until next week. So it kind of gives you this feeling of, oh, I can't wait to see what happens next. Whereas with older comics, you can just binge read it. But that's also sometimes a reason for me not to read the comics, because it doesn't give you the urgency to read it. It's like, oh, they're going to be in that catalog forever. So I'll read it some other time, especially if it's like a 12 episode series. With this one, this was easy to read. It was like a 15 minute read. And now I still want to see what Scarlet Witch is going to do. So maybe I'll just read some more of these more recent comics. Because then you get that, you know, I want to see what happens next. Is the new episode already there? It's the feeling that we had, in before the era of Netflix and Amazon Prime, where TV shows would air an episode, and then you'd had to wait an entire week to see what happens next. That is why so many TV series were episodical. So it didn't really matter if you missed an episode. So Star Trek was like that. They were standalone episodes. But now with the advent of streaming and binge-watching, more and more of these series are turning into these long mythologies. Even X-Files, that I'm currently watching, had both standalone episodes. The majority, I think, were standalone episodes. But they also had mythology episodes, kind of parts of a bigger story that was unfolding over the seasons. And I don't think they ever wrapped it up. But anyway, that also makes you want to keep watching the series because you want to know what's really going on. Like Lost. Every episode of Lost ended with this cliffhanger, or Battlestar Galactica as well. And you're like, oh, can't wait to see what happens next week. I love that feeling, actually. It's the feeling of anticipation, which is something that we've lost a little bit because everything is always available right away. Anticipation itself is part of the fun, I think. All right. What else am I going to talk about? Did I play any new video games? Not really. Just a lot of Animal Crossing, but I'm not going to bore you with that. I should start to stream the other two games that I bought for the Switch. The Witcher and Xenoblade. But I haven't done that so far. No, I didn't think there's any video game news. I didn't put on my VR goggles either because, well, my rooms upstairs are empty. And I can't use my rooms upstairs until the floors are installed. So I guess we have to go over to the world of the liturgy. Samuel asked me to talk a little bit more about the rosary, which is, let's say, formally speaking, not really liturgy. So there is a difference between liturgy and devotion. And the rosary is considered to be more of a devotional practice. So that's something you do. What is the difference? Liturgy is kind of a service to God. It is, basically what Jesus tells us to do. Do this in memory of me. It's a ritualized form of prayer, you could say. Whereas the rosary, and plus it's universal. Liturgy is something that transcends, you know, local communities and your personal prayer life. It's something you do together. The rosary is something that is a devotion. It's not something that is compulsory. It is optional. It can be helpful, but it can also be unhelpful. The rosary is very individual. It's something, of course, you can pray the rosary together, but it's more of a prayer exercise. I'm wondering if there's more to say about the difference between... Actually, I never gave it some thought. What is the difference between liturgy and devotion? Difference... Yeah, I'm just going to Google it. Difference, liturgy, because I want to know, and devotions. Technically speaking, liturgy is a subset of rituals. No, this is not very helpful. What is the difference between liturgy and devotions? The downside of Googling is that you don't always find good content because there's so much out there. Let's see. The Constitution of the Liturgy from Vatican II. The liturgy is the summit toward which the activity of the church is directed. It is also the fount from which all powers flow. Wow, that sounds like the Infinity Stones. The liturgy is something that is done by Jesus in his humanity. This is why he is present in the church in the celebrations of the liturgy. That's true. There is always this Christ-centric aspect of liturgy. When we celebrate Mass, for instance, we join the divine liturgy. We join, and the liturgy is the exchange of love between the Father and the Son through the Holy Spirit. And when we celebrate liturgy here on earth, the purpose is to involve us in this exchange between the Father and the Son. That is important to remember. Every celebration of the liturgy, every Mass, every gathering for morning prayer or evening prayer, every sacrament is a sacred action that is more important than anything else the church does because it's done by Christ the priest and his body, the church. So that binds us intimately with Jesus Christ himself. Now, do they say what devotion is? Oh. In addition to the liturgy, the work of the whole church, which is the work of the whole church, there's also good work on the part of individuals. Could be private prayer, the offering of our lives, and popular devotions. Such devotions are to be highly recommended, but they should fit in with the liturgical seasons of the year. Okay. Let's see. Devotional practices. So I guess the devotional practices are more to strengthen your individual prayer life. It's not something that the church does. So anyway, let's go back to the rosary. Rosary is a devotion, and it's a form of prayer. It's a repetitive prayer. It reminds some people of mantras in other religious traditions. The difference is a mantra is something you say to get in a certain state. The words itself don't matter that much. Whereas the rosary is very much a prayer itself, and it's directed towards someone. In this case, for the rosary, it's directed towards God the Father, because you pray the Our Father, to the Trinity, in the Glory be to the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and also to the Virgin Mary, the most highly venerated saint in the Catholic Church, because she's the Mother of God. The rosary itself, the practice of the rosary, stems from the Dominican order. I'm just going to read here what I find on Wikipedia. It uses a knotted rope with beads or just knots. You can also make one yourself just with a piece of basically any form of thread, or I forgot the word. What is the word that you, for the stuff that you use for knotted rosaries? Ugh, whatever. It's Friday evening. I'm too tired. But the using prayer ropes is not something that is exclusive to the Christian tradition. It's also used in for Muslim prayers and in some other traditions as well. The idea is that you have something that you have something physical that counts for you, that puts, you know, helps you to focus on the prayer itself. Oh, twine. Thank you, Mike. Twine. Such a strange word, twine. Anyway. Knotted prayer ropes were used in early Christianity. Apparently, the Desert Fathers have created, these were monks living in the desert. They created these prayer ropes, and they used the knots to keep track of the number of times they said the Jesus prayer. According to tradition, the concept of the rosary was given to Saint Dominic in an apparition of the Virgin Mary. This was in the 13th century, the beginning of the 13th century. However, we already have historical proof of the rosary existing in the 9th century. So it's probably a bit of a pious legend. This Marian apparition to Saint Dominic received the title of Our Lady of the Rosary. That's also feast day in the Catholic Church. In the 15th century, the prayer of the rosary was promoted by Alain de la Roche, Blessed Alan of the Rock. It sounds much better in French. Alain de la Roche, Blessed Alan of the Rock. He was also a Dominican priest and theologian, and started many rosary confraternities. It's spread around the world, and it's still a very common practice in today's Catholic Church. Some popes have also endorsed the practice and promoted it, especially the most recent popes, John Paul II, Paul VI, Pope Benedict, Pope Francis. They all encourage you to pray the rosary. Rosary especially for newer Catholics, is a bit enigmatic and also sometimes a bit off-putting. Why would I repeat the same prayer over and over again? Why don't I just pray from the heart? Well, it is because it's not the words that matter that much in prayer. It is the movement of your heart. And sometimes repetition can help you to stay in a state of prayer. If you always want to pray from the heart using your own words, it's very fatiguing. I speak from experience. If you try silent prayer, it's very easy for your mind to wander and to get distracted. The rosary, just the physical, you know, moving the beads in your fingers, saying the same words over and over again, puts you in a state of prayer. Also, in order to focus you, the rosary itself uses biblical stories to what we call the mysteries of the rosary. And the mysteries are moments in the life of Mary and Jesus. And by giving each decade of Hail Marys a theme in a certain way, every decade is every 10 times you pray the Hail Mary, you connect it with one of the mysteries. So there are to pray the rosary, you start with the sign of the cross. You use a crucifix, a little crucifix at the end of the rosary. You say the Apostles' Creed, still on the crucifix. Then you say the Our Father. You pray the Our Father on the first bead. So there are smaller beads, 10 of them, and then you've got the bigger ones in the center with a little bit more space. Those are for the Our Fathers. Then you say on the next three beads, the Hail Mary. They stand for the three theological virtues of faith, hope, and charity. And then before you pray the Our Father, on the next large bead, you say the Glory be to the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, as it was in the beginning, is now and ever shall be, etc. There are various versions of that. And then you continue to pray these decades, what they call decades. You could just pray one decade if you don't have time. Or you can pray a set of mysteries, and they are divided into joyful mysteries, sorrowful mysteries, and glorious mysteries. And Pope John Paul II added a fourth set of mysteries, which are the luminous mysteries. These are all kind of combine a number of episodes from the life of Jesus. So joyful mysteries, the Annunciation, the Visitation, the Nativity, Presentation of Jesus at the Temple, and the Finding of Jesus at the Temple. The sorrowful mysteries are kind of more focused on suffering. Agony in the garden, where Jesus prays before he is arrested. The scourging at the pillar, the crowning with thorns, the carrying of the cross, and the crucifixion and death of Jesus. Then the glorious mysteries start with the resurrection, then the ascension of Jesus, the descent of the Holy Spirit, Pentecost, the Assumption of the Virgin Mary, and the coronation of Mary. That is not in the Bible, but it is something that kind of flows from the special place that Mary has. So the Dormition of Mary and the coronation have been part of Christian tradition for a long time. But it still flows from the biblical importance of Mary in the history of salvation. And then you've got the luminous mysteries. Starts with the baptism of Jesus in the River Jordan by John the Baptist. The wedding at Cana. The proclamation of the kingdom of God. That is a bit of it's not one event in the life of Jesus, because he did this throughout his public life. Then the fourth luminous mystery is the Transfiguration. And the fifth one is the institution of the Eucharist during the Last Supper. If you want to get more information about this whole practice, there are so many videos and websites that can explain it much better than I do. But if you want to have live companionship while you are praying the rosary, if you don't want to do it by yourself, I can recommend Greg and Jennifer. They founded the Rosary Army many years ago. I teamed up with Greg and Jennifer for many years, building SQPN and doing a lot of podcasting. But they still have the Rosary Army, and they pray live rosaries on YouTube. So that is something. You can just join them through a YouTube live stream. Just look for Rosary Army on YouTube and subscribe to that channel so you get a notification when they go live. And they are on American time, on Eastern time. So they live in Atlanta, in the state of Atlanta. Or actually, Georgia, I should say. So maybe it's difficult if you don't live in America to join them, but they're tremendous people and very, very good guides when it comes to the rosary. Now that I think of it, I think on that YouTube channel there is not really a video tutorial on how to pray the rosary. Maybe I should ask Greg to make one of those, because I think it could help a lot of people. Just do some videos that explain the rosary. There are a lot of those, but I think Greg and Jennifer could do a pretty good job doing that. Lynn in the chat room says that she's also been hosting Zoom rosary prayers for the Filipino community in North Carolina. Lynn had developed a PowerPoint presentation to facilitate the prayers. It's a very rewarding experience. Yes, actually, even though the rosary is something that is very suitable for private prayer, praying together is always better than praying alone. And with that, I think we've come to the end of this episode of Father Roderick to the Max. Thank you so much for listening, and thanks to the community that has joined me in the chat room. If you want to get notified when I do one of these live streams for the patrons, make sure to check your email. That's all I can say. And I'll try to find a more fixed moment of the week and of the day to do this. But right now, I've got to kind of squeeze it in whenever I have time. Thanks again for being a patron. Thank you so much for your support. Please pray for the other Patreon members, for the community. Let's help each other in our walk of faith and in our walk through life by our community support. All right. Take care. God bless.